It's nice to see some of you. I'm actually going to ask you to turn your camera on for just a second so I can see some smiling faces. Or frowning faces if you want to frown, I guess. I don't know. You got to give me a break. You know, I haven't seen many different faces for a long time. So even on Zoom, it's nice to see everyone. And you do not have to keep your camera on for the whole meeting. That's fine. I'll probably bug you again at the end so we can all wave to each other. But it's nice to see all of you, I hope. I hope you're having a good summer. I know it's an unusual summer. And so I'll leave it at that. Welcome to this meeting. Many of you returning students know who I am, but many of you are new students. My name is Pete Jutras. I'm the director of the Hugh Hodgson School of Music. And I'm really glad to be able to host this meeting and tell you a little bit about what's happening in the fall. Obviously, this is an unusual situation for all of us. It evolves by the minute, but we're going to try and give you as many updates today as we can. We've got some information to get out to you, probably about 40 minutes worth or so, maybe 45 minutes. And then after that, we want to take as many questions as we can and try to answer them. I'm not going to promise that I have all the answers. They may not always be the answers you want to hear, but we will do our best. So just the ground rules for doing this, we're going to have everybody on mute while we do the information part of this. Dr. Connie Frigo, who is our saxophone professor, is moderating the chat. And as you have questions, just put them in the chat. And when we get to the question and answer portion of the meeting, we'll start at the top and just work our way through the chat and answer everything that we can. I might encourage you to wait a few minutes before posting questions because some of the questions you have right now might be answered by what I'm going to say in the informational part. But if we can't answer a question, we're going to note it and try and answer it for you later. Maybe something that we're working on, it may be something we need to ask another office about. So with that in mind, I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. And there's going to be some slides that you'll see. So this is a meeting to talk about our fall operations. I told you who I am. So the world today is not what we hoped it would be. I'll be honest, when we went home in March and closed things down, I think I expected that by late summer, you know, we'd be getting back to normal, we'd be rescheduling the degree recitals that were canceled and going forward. We did not expect a surge in cases to happen over the summer. We did not expect to be where we are now with you know, rising cases and increased rates of positive tests and all those kinds of things. So unfortunately, we continue to live in a world of COVID-19 around us, and we need to figure out how we can live in that world and keep all of you as safe as possible. I'm sure you're well aware that the University of Georgia, under the direction of the University System of Georgia, which is the statewide body of all the state institutions, is planning to open, and we're planning to have face-to-face instruction. This is going to be highly modified face-to-face instruction in most cases, but it's not going to be the same as being fully online. So here in the School of Music, our priorities are first and foremost your safety and your health. In my humble opinion, there is no acceptable level of risk with this virus. One death is certainly not acceptable in the School of Music. One hospitalization is not acceptable if we can avoid it. That is absolutely my top concern, and that's what all of the information you're going to hear today is based on. As we do everything we can to keep people safe, my other priority is how can we make music under these conditions? I know that's what we're here for. I know that's what we do. I know how disappointed we all are that we haven't been able to make music under normal circumstances for several months. Some of that is still going to be curtailed, but my efforts are what can we do safely that will allow some music making to go forward. I think it's very important that we acknowledge risks that are specific and unique to music making, particularly risks of singing and playing wind instruments and brass instruments, where there's a lot more air moving than there is in a normal just speaking setting. So even though you see guidelines and ideas about what's going to happen around campus with respect to regular academic classes, you have to keep in mind that most of what we do in the School of Music is not in a regular academic setting, and we have to acknowledge some of those additional risks. There are a lot of opinions about the virus. I am doing my best to not live at all in the world of opinion, but look to evidence and facts and science and research to guide us. So to that end, I have spent much of the summer trying to listen and learn as much as I can. A lot of what we've developed is based on guidelines put forward by Johns Hopkins University for the Peabody Conservatory. Obviously, we feel this is a good source because it's one of the top medical schools in the world, but also one of the top music schools in the world. And they've had several seminars and guidance that they've released. There is an ongoing study. There are actually several ongoing studies with respect to aerosol transmission, which I'll say more about in just a moment. Some very, very preliminary non-peer-reviewed results have been released from the UC Boulder study. There's more that will be coming out soon, and these specifically relate to music making. I've been in touch with many directors at many other universities around the nation. I have a weekly conference call with the directors of the largest schools of music in each of the 50 states. So I'm constantly talking to the directors at our peer institutions, places like Florida State and LSU and Illinois and Michigan and Penn State and Kansas. And we're sharing information, what we hear from our experts on campus, what we think might be a good plan going forward. One of those universities that I didn't put on the slide is University of Minnesota, where they have a former CDC director on their faculty, and they are doing their own aerosol research. And some of that aerosol research about classrooms was just published yesterday. So there's a lot happening. And then locally, I'm trying to talk to anyone who will talk to me, but especially professionals in the fields of medicine and epidemiology and workplace safety. So that's what's going into our guidance. I'm not going to say that any of this is perfect, and I'm not going to say we know exactly what is safe and what isn't. Any researcher or doctor worth their salt, in my opinion, will tell you right now that they don't know for sure either. This is a new situation, and the world of science is learning. But we're going on the best practices and the best information that we have at the moment. And I will also add that we're willing to adjust as that information changes and new research becomes available. Okay, forgive me. I know it's summer break, but I'm going to put my teacher hat on for just a moment, and I'll try to make this fairly quick and painless. But I want to talk to you a little bit about droplets and aerosols with respect to what we do in the School of Music, just so everyone is on the same page. Droplets, or respiratory droplets, are expelled when we breathe, when we speak. They're expelled in greater numbers when we sneeze, when we cough, when we talk loudly, all those kinds of things. We know that droplets transmit COVID-19. That's fairly well established. Droplets tend to be relatively heavy with respect to the air around them, so they fall to the ground fairly quickly. They tend to fall to the ground before they can travel 2 meters, which is about 6 feet. That's where the 6-foot distancing comes into play. That is really designed to help mitigate the spread of COVID-19 through droplets. Masks are also very effective at stopping droplets. What we've heard much more about in the last 2 to 3 weeks is aerosols. And it was interesting. You all are getting the third version of this meeting. There were two for undergrads the last 2 days. Yesterday, a great amount of information about aerosols came out, including an editorial in the New York Times, this information from University of Minnesota and a rethinking of one of the cruise ship spreading scenarios from March. And a couple people have commented that, you know, actually musicians have been ahead of the curve in this respect, because we've been talking about aerosols for several weeks and the concern with those. So how are aerosols different than droplets? Aerosols are much smaller particles. They can hang in the air and float in the air for longer periods of time than droplets. So they don't necessarily fall to the ground within 6 feet. And if you're in an enclosed space over time, aerosols will build up. We know that COVID-19 can attach itself to these small aerosol particles. What's up for some, I don't want to say debate, but question right now is how effective are those aerosols at actually transmitting the virus? And I don't think the scientific community is sure, but the more I hear about it, the more I hear the scientific community say they think it's likely and they think we should act as if aerosols can spread the virus. And that's kind of that rethinking of the cruise ship scenario. They're now speculating that maybe most of that spread was through aerosols. A lot of aerosols are expelled when we sing. A lot of aerosols are expelled when we play wind instruments and brass instruments. And if we're not going to wear masks when we do those activities, we have to consider those risks. And so that's what's behind a lot of what I'm about to show to you. So aerosols and wind playing or singing, the research is ongoing. I basically mentioned that. The folks at Johns Hopkins talk about four important pillars of risk mitigation. And those are masking, hygiene, distancing, and air exchange. And so the first two, masking and hygiene, are under your control. Masking is mandated by USG in all indoor spaces. You're going to have your mask on at all times in the Hugh Hodgson School of Music. That's going to be very effective at protecting the people around you. The more I talk to people and the more I learn about this, the more I understand how well masking works. Everybody with any expertise is saying that if we all wore masks, you know, basically all the time, we would do a lot towards stopping the spread of this virus. The only time you can take your mask off is when you're doing what I'm doing right now, and I'm in my office in the School of Music. This week is the first time I've really been in my office since March. I have the door closed and I'm the only one in here, so I can take my mask off. If someone were to knock on the door, I've got my mask handy. I'm going to go ahead and put my mask on to talk to that person. If I go out in the hallway, if I go to any of our classrooms, I'm going to put my mask on. So the only time you can have it off is in an office with the door closed. And you are the only person in the room. We have set up special conditions for singers and wind and brass players to remove their masks at certain times when they're singing and playing, and I'll tell you more about that as we go. Hygiene is also very much under your control, and that is washing or sanitizing your hands frequently throughout the day. And UGA is going to be installing hand sanitizer stations throughout the hallways. So you'll be able to use that hand sanitizer, and we won't necessarily have to increase traffic in the restroom to wash your hands, but we want you doing that regularly. Forgive me. Another thing I wanted to say about masking, you'll forgive me for sounding like a dad for a moment, but that's part of who I am and part of what I do. I would really encourage you to practice wearing your mask. Get used to having it on for long periods of time. Use the next couple of weeks to try that and find out what kinds of masks are comfortable, which ones you're able to tolerate for a couple of hours at a time. And have plenty of masks when you come to campus. They're pretty easy to find. You can get them for $5, $6, $7. You can make your own. But have a good supply, because you may not be able to wash them every day. You're probably going to want to carry a spare with you, so when one gets really moist, you can change it for another one. So I would encourage you to practice your masking. I've been doing that, and it takes some getting used to have it on for a long time. Okay, distancing and air exchange are the things that we can control with basically the way we operate in the School of Music. So for distancing, when any singing or wind playing or brass playing happens with a mask removed, we're going to maintain 20 feet of distance. That's a lot of space. That's a lot more than 6 feet. But again, that's designed for your safety and the safety of those around you. This means, obviously, that we won't be able to play or sing in very large groups, and that we'll only be able to do this in relatively large spaces. But we are working hard to maximize what we are able to do. As far as air exchange, and just kind of a lot of this is about air volume as well. So when we're singing and playing these instruments, we're going to use only our largest spaces. We're not going to do this in faculty studios. We're going to do it in the band hall and the orchestra hall and the choral suite and the auditoriums where there's more cubic feet of air. We're going to limit your time exposure. The initial research in the Boulder aerosol study shows that 30 minutes, after 30 minutes, there's not a substantial buildup, and keeping your distance from someone keeps you relatively safe. After that, there's much more buildup, and distancing becomes less effective as the aerosols build up in the room. So all of these activities will be limited to 30 minutes when they happen face to face. We're going to limit the number of players. You'll see that as we go through the plan. The researchers do believe that outdoors is much safer than indoors because you have obviously a much higher, almost an infinite level of air exchange. It's not really infinite, but it's a lot more than you get indoors and a lot more space around you. So we may explore things that we can do outdoors. We know that's dependent on the weather, so we're not going to count on that as a replacement strategy, but we're going to see outdoor work as kind of a bonus. When we're able to do it, great, we get to make more music outdoors. In the meantime, we'll focus on what we can do safely indoors. So my areas of focus, my priorities in working on all of this summer, as I said, you know, the first priority is to keep all of you safe. There is nothing that is more important to me than that. And it's not just keeping us safe, it's keeping the community around us safe. I mean, we need to do our part as a group of roughly 600 people to make sure that we're not contributing to the spread of the virus, and we're helping the numbers go down so we can all get back to normal as soon as possible. That's my first priority. It's a bit of a cliche, but you hear the word triage used a lot in times like this, and triage just means, you know, we're gonna give the highest amount of attention to the things that need it most. And so I have effectively triaged applied lessons and solo recitals as our most important priority. So all our efforts in preserving music making are directed at those first, so that you are able to work with your teacher at times face-to-face when we're able, that you're able to give those degree recitals, which I know for most of our graduate students are a very important part of the process. It's a little bit easier to do these things safely because there are not very many players. You know, there's one, maybe two if there's a pianist. Maybe at times we can do duo and trio work, but we're going to start with that and do as much of that as we can, prioritize our space for that, and then hopefully as conditions improve, we will build back up to more chamber music and maybe then to some small ensembles and then eventually back to normal. But for now, the focus is on preserving applied instruction and recitals. And I hope you understand that I do not want to take anything away from your ability to make music. That's as painful to me as it is to you. We had plans to do Beethoven 9, hopefully in Georgia Theater this year. We had plans to perform with Kishibashi. We had all kinds of exciting projects that involved large numbers of people. And And I really want to do those, but for now, those need to go on hold. And I think we have to be patient and we have to be understanding that setting up conditions where we can at least do our lessons and recitals is much better than nothing at all. So let's focus on that and let's build up from there. Just a few words about what your class instruction is going to look like. And by this, I mean, you know, academic classes in theory and musicology and, you know, things like seminars and pedagogy and literature, academic seminars, not studio seminars. So per USG guidelines and recommendations, this is happening all over campus. All our classrooms are set up for 6-foot distancing. Once you go in the rooms, you'll see the seats in a slightly different configuration. We've moved some tables, we've moved some desks around, so there will be space there. Everyone in class will have their masks on, so the 6-foot spacing is fine. We're not playing instruments, we're not singing. So that's the way that will work. Most of your classes, you should prepare for what we call a high flex model. And that means some of the class is going to be online and some of it is going to be in person. A normal class may not fit in its usual classroom with 6-foot distancing, and it's not like we have a huge supply of larger classrooms just sitting around. So sometimes, you know, maybe half the class will come on Tuesday, the other half is online, and then you switch on Thursday. Or maybe there's 2 or 3 online classes and then some face-to-face meetings. That will vary depending on your instructor and the class and the number of people in the class, but prepare for a mix of online and in-person instruction. A little kind of time management issue, all the class times will be adjusted to add 5 minutes between each class period. I know for most of you graduate students, you stay in our building and don't really have to travel around campus, but this helps others who do. So class start times are going to get progressively later throughout the day as these 5 minutes add up collectively. So on a Monday, you know, 8 o'clock will still start at 8 o'clock. The 9:05 class will be moved to 9:10, 5 minutes later. The 10:10 class is going to be moved to 10:20, which is 10 minutes later, and so on. So the afternoon classes will be considerably later than their normal times. You can go online and see that new schedule. I should note that to my knowledge, and I could be wrong, those class times are not yet updated in places like Athena. But you can go see them on the registrar's website. And another thing you're probably mostly aware of, but just in case you weren't, the university is moving to fully online instruction after Thanksgiving break. So when we kind of go away for Thanksgiving break, we won't come back to campus. That doesn't mean classes are over. They'll remain online for the rest of the semester. But some of your professors may be doing some assessment things before Thanksgiving break. So just be aware of that. So that's a brief rundown of what happens with classes. I know everybody's probably very curious about ensembles, and at this point you may have heard some about our plans for ensembles. Because of the spacing guidelines and just all of the safety concerns, we are limiting ensembles to very few people, which means that most of our large ensembles and our ensemble work will not happen as normal. At Johns Hopkins, they recommended limiting ensembles, even those that are masked, to less than 10 people. And just to be clear, I didn't say this earlier, you know, we have permission for wind players, brass players, singers to remove their masks in applied lessons and in solo performances, but that's it. So if you don't need to move air to play your instrument, if you're a pianist, you're a percussionist, a string player, if you play guitar or harp, you will keep your mask on when you're rehearsing and you're playing. So obviously this presents, you know, big challenges for bands and choirs. So our major bands and choirs will be online. They will not be meeting in person. So Hodgson Wind Ensemble and Wind Symphony, Hodgson Singers, Men's Glee Club, and Women's Glee Club will all be meeting online. And they're going to have, I think, some very good productive activities that you all will do. And it's not going to be you know, let's try and have a poor imitation of band or choir online and play through Zoom. The conductors have actually been working hard to think about important topics that we can cover while we're not rehearsing that are valuable to you as musicians and can be really productive to your musical growth. So it's not going to be a just let's try and throw this online. We will have more information about which ensemble you should register for coming out this week, this coming week of the 3rd. Orchestra is a little bit easier because string players can be masked and play with 6 or 7 foot distancing. So university orchestra is going to meet in groups of 10, think basically a double quartet with 2 bass players, and they will rehearse repertoire. Those groups are going to rehearse once a week. So if you're a string player, you will still register for orchestra and you'll be able to play. And we're kind of hoping, there's no guarantee on this, but if the weather allows, maybe later in the semester, those groups can get together and do a performance outdoors or something like that. If you're a wind or brass player and you were thinking you were going to be in orchestra, that's not going to happen this semester. You'll go ahead and register for wind ensemble or wind symphony, and the band area will have guidance on that. We have several large ensembles that are made up primarily of non-music majors. These are ensembles like University Chorus and Philharmonia, and unfortunately we're not going to hold those this semester. We love those ensembles and we love working with the community and with non-majors, but conditions just don't allow it, and those non-majors are not, they're not really going to fit in with the online activities that the conductors are planning. So we hope to bring those back as soon as conditions improve and allow. Most of the medium-sized ensembles are not going to be meeting. Jazz ensembles will be meeting online. And just if you have a question about that, check with your major professor or the ensemble conductor. And then we may explore some smaller ensembles outside as space and conditions allow. Okay, I'm going to take a break. You're probably tired of listening to me, and turn it over to Dr. Amy Pollard, who many of you know, and she is our Associate Director for Performance, also Professor of Bassoon, and she's going to tell you a little bit about applied lessons and recitals.
Hey, everyone. So a couple things about applied lessons. Again, we're trying to do the most that we can for you to have some face-to-face instruction with these. I do want to encourage you to be really flexible with things throughout the semester, not just with lessons, but with everything, because everything is kind of a new moving target, but also be really good with communication. So make sure that you're in touch with your applied professor regularly, that you're reading your emails, and that you're responding to things. That's going to be crucial throughout this process. With applied lessons, for those instruments that do not require their mouth to play, so composition, guitar, harp, percussion, piano, and strings, you'll have normal lessons with 6 to 8 foot distancing and a 50-minute time limit. And these are going to be fully masked, both you and your professor. Most of these are going to probably occur in the normal applied lesson studios for your professor. And then in between each of your lessons, you're going to there's going to be a 30-minute space to allow for any aerosols to kind of disperse. For unmasked lessons, so brass, winds, and voice. So again, these are going to only be in large spaces with at least 20 feet distancing, a 30-minute time limit, and then the room has to be vacant for 60 minutes. So this means that most lessons are going to be in the band hall, in the choral suite, in the orchestra room, possibly in some of the recital halls, maybe in the Georgia Museum of Art. We're going to find spaces for these to happen. But due to how many students there are, you might only get an in-person lesson every 2 to 3 weeks. They might be on nights or weekends. And then the rest of your lessons will be online. With wind and brass instruments as well, we're looking into using bell covers on your instruments. So there'll be more information about that soon. We don't have that yet. for any student, whether you are a string player or a wind player, you can opt for online lessons if you want. So if you feel uncomfortable with this, you feel more at risk, that's totally fine. There isn't a formal process for this. Just let your applied professor know and say, hey, I don't feel comfortable with this. Can we do all of my lessons online? Or you can also ask for some sort of a situation where maybe you do two or three lessons in person and the rest online. The professors as well, because there's this high flex method of instruction, they might not be doing all of your lessons in person either. So they're going to maybe plan for a mixture of online and in person. For your lessons as well, you're going to need to bring your own music stand. You're going to need to have a towel if you're a brass player to collect condensation, or I guess if you just sweat a lot, I don't know. So trying to keep things as clean as possible. Bring your own music. Don't share music with other people. And for everyone, you're going to have a lot less time with pianists. Okay, so you're accompanists, you're going to have a lot less time with them than usual. Have to remember that all of our wonderful piano friends are people too. They're not robots. And they're going to be exposed to viral load just as much as you, if not more, with all of this. So we're going to be respecting their time a lot. All right, recitals. We're going to try to keep degree recitals as much as we can. So those are going to be the highest priority, is holding degree recitals. These are going to look different than they have in the past. So there's going to be a limit of two performers in each. Okay, and the distancing and time limits apply to this just like they do to lessons. So that means that if you are a wind player and you're playing with a pianist, you can only do 30 minutes of repertoire with piano. Okay, we're limiting times to 45 minutes total. So if you're a wind player and do 30 minutes with piano, then you can follow that with 15 minutes of unaccompanied. If you are playing with piano and you're a wind player, you have to be at least 20 feet away from them. Again, none of this is ideal. None of us love this. So we're also not going to have any public audiences, okay? Your major professor can be there in the back of the hall, maybe one to two immediate family with advanced permission, but you have to get that cleared first. All recitals are going to be streamed. There's not going to be a fee for recital streaming, but you still have your recital fee, which covers recording, and it's going to cover streaming. If you want a video recording of your recital, then that's going to be an extra charge, but we're covering all of the recital streaming fees. I think that's it. Am I missing anything else in recitals?
No, just the line for no fee recital attendance, that got left in for the undergrads. That's not something grad students have to worry about.
True.
So thank you very much, Dr. Pollard. So I'm now, I believe, going to turn it over to Dr. Childs, our Associate Director for Graduate Studies. And he's going to talk a little bit about practice rooms and use of the building.
Right. Hello, everyone. For those of you who haven't met me, as Dr. Jutras just said, I'm Adrian Childs. I'm the Associate Director for Graduate Studies and Administration. And mostly right now, I'm going to talk to you about our use of the building. We've already talked a little bit about how lessons will work and how classrooms will work. Starting here, as you can see on the slide, with practice rooms. Practice rooms are a particular challenge for us because they're incredibly small spaces. So you can take all of the guidelines that we've already talked through and imagine how they're going to affect us in a much smaller space where also there is a much smaller volume of air. All practice room use is going to be scheduled and use of the rooms is going to be by reservation only. We will have 60-minute slots where the rooms can be used. When you are in the room, obviously no one else can be in the room with you. That's just you in that space. And then to make sure that there is satisfactory air exchange to clear aerosols, the rooms will then be vacant for 90 minutes between each scheduled session. You will need to bring your own music stand, and we'll all need to work on learning to touch things less so that we limit the amount that we may be leaving traces of virus behind. We do have throughout the building sanitation stations that will have wipes that you can use for surfaces. We will want people to wipe any surfaces they're going to touch in a practice room, both on entry and on exit. You can imagine, given these restrictions on the use, that practice room availability is going to be extremely limited. We will have procedures in place for you to express preferences for when your time will be, so that we can make assignments as effectively as possible. We are also going to need to give priority to those students who cannot practice anywhere else. So if you play a more portable instrument, you are likely to be a lower priority for the practice room scheduling compared to those who may not have any options other than using the practice rooms. At the end of the slide here, this isn't really just for practice rooms. I'd say this is a good collective thing for us to keep in mind for our use and our time in the building entirely. We all need to do our parts to keep our spaces safe. All of these limitations and policies that were created, as Dr. Jutras has said already, are absolutely with your safety in mind, with our safety in mind, with the safety of everyone in the building in mind. We all have to take these steps seriously and practice them so that we can make music. Expanding from that then, just some observations about general use of the building. We will, under university system and university policy, have masks required at all times. We also need to work on social distancing. Wearing a mask does not prevent you from also needing to try to stay 6 feet away from anyone else that you might come into contact with. And we will all want to cultivate the habit of washing and sanitizing our hands frequently. There are going to be both hand sanitizer stations and sanitizing wipe stations throughout the building, so that will be something you can do without having to go into a bathroom. Basically, all activities that might ordinarily happen in the building but are not related to instruction, we're going to strongly encourage everyone to try to do those online, to not attempt to do anything face-to-face if we don't need it. So in particular, if you have things you need to work with our staff on, your first line is always going to be to send them an email or to call them rather than stopping by their office. Most of our staff will be working in a mix of in their offices and at distance, but we're going to try to encourage everyone as much as you can. Think about the distance contact first. Use the phone, use email. We'll do this for things like advising meetings, if you have like regular TA meetings, anything along those lines, we're going to ask not be done in person. So the biggest thing, if we extrapolate from that, is that if you are in the building, it's because you're there for something that you are scheduled to be there for. You have a class meeting, you're in that classroom, that's great. You have a lesson, you're doing that. You have your scheduled time in a practice room, you're doing that. What we will not have in the building is capacity for hanging out. If we take all of these social distancing requirements and put them in place, there isn't room in the building for all of us. So when we're not in the building for a purpose, we need to not be in the building to the extent that that's possible. I do want to mention here specifically, we don't have a bullet point on it for the slide, but these same restrictions are also going to apply for those of you who have TA offices. We are probably going to have to reduce the number of TAs who are assigned to those offices compared to previous years. And the offices themselves, like practice rooms, are going to be strictly limited to one of you in the office at a time. And basically every TA is going to have to schedule when they are in the office, perhaps for class prep purposes. It will be possible to hold in-person office hours. We can permit very short visits with one TA and one student. That will be masked and at 6 foot distance, which in every TA office means one of you is sitting by the door and one of you is sitting as far from the door as possible. But we have measured them all. There is room to do that safely. But basically we will have to develop a strict schedule for every office where only one TA is in the office at a time. We will have gaps between those times so that we are sure that we have a good exchange of air in terms of trying to clear aerosols. So again, that just kind of underscores the fact we really don't have spaces for just hanging out in the building. Okay. And then the last bullet here, we are shortening building hours, again, with the goal of making sure we have ample time to clear aerosols The building will close at 9:30 p.m. on weekdays, and it's going to be closed to the public on weekends. Okay, so we're kind of used to the notion that the doors to the music building are open most of the time. This is also going to change. All right. I think our next slide and set of information is going to come from Kathleen Powell, our graduate programs administrator.
Hi, everyone. It's great to see you. We're going to go over a few things on this slide, advising and other matters. Advising, a lot of the returning students, you've done your advising and you've been cleared. If you haven't done that yet, if you could go ahead and be working on that, that would be great. The incoming students, you're going to get an email, I think, later today that will explain. It's actually a pretty simple process. It's all going to be online. And the professors have done this already spring semester online. So we'll send you all the information for that later today. Scheduling, I want to thank, actually, I talked with Molly Stanley. She's our wonderful undergraduate advisor, and she had worked on these points on this slide with the undergraduate meeting. So she sent me a lot of really great information. I want to thank her. In her notes for scheduling, she had talked about something I think Dr. Jutras already hit on, which is you're going to need to put a lot of time and thought into your schedule. And when you look at the classes right now on Athena, the new class schedule does not appear there. So you are going to need to allow yourself some time to really think through, well, when is that class actually going to happen? And I know Dan Phipps, who's our wonderful scheduler, and he may be on this meeting, I don't know. He had sent out the class schedule as a PDF, and we'll send that out to we'll send it out to everyone. Returning students may already have it, but it helps me. I'm starting to get the hang of it, but you'll definitely want to allow yourself some time to think through that. The DRC accommodation, that's Disability Resource Center, they are wonderful. If you need an accommodation, if you're in a high-risk category or have a pre-existing condition, then you'd want to get with them and apply for accommodation as soon as possible. Oh, thank you, Dr. Frigo. Just put the link up. That's wonderful. Yeah,
and I'll just jump in real quick and add the main purpose of that is if you feel that you're in a high-risk category for the virus and you would like your entire schedule to be online, you would apply to the DRC for that accommodation.
That's great. And then the performer's pantry, that's in the main office on the third floor. And I think it's outside Mrs. Stanley's office. It's a resource for students who may be experiencing food insecurity, may not be able to get to the grocery store or have financial hardship, maybe don't have a meal plan. And it usually has items like canned goods, yogurt, rice, pasta, granola bars. And we definitely encourage you to use that resource when you need it. A wonderful resource. The student resources, this was kind of a broad encouragement. There are a lot of student resources available at UGA, whether it's mental health clinics, medical health, the health service is wonderful. We have a great writing center, the career center, division of academic enhancement, tutoring. There are just a lot of opportunities. There are a lot of organizations on campus that are there to help. So if you need any connection to any of those, please reach out to us and we can help you find and connect up with some of those resources. And she also had in her notes, and I think it's a good thing to say, so if you are ever feeling like you're starting to fall behind academically or you're struggling physically or emotionally, please reach out to this office, to any of the administrators, your professors, so we can help support you and help connect you with some resources that could help you. And we all understand that there are a lot of stresses and a lot of challenges, and we can all help and help each other. Check your UGA email. That's already been mentioned. That's so important. I was thinking this morning, actually, that I'm going to sit down this weekend and reread all the emails that have been coming out. There are a lot for students and there are a lot for staff and faculty too. So, you know, in the past you may, I'm sure everyone has a system that they use to process email. Maybe they like doing it first thing in the morning or they have a routine. I would allow a little more time for that. You've probably noticed that. And just give yourself time to really read those. Anything that is sent, you know, it's considered that you then have that information. If you send something out and there's a deadline included in that, you know, they have the understanding that you now know what that deadline is. So you may need to carve out a little bit more time for your email. At least I definitely am needing to do that. And I was going to just throw in there, and I didn't ask to make it a bullet point, but kind of along those lines, and other people may have different experiences, but I would just in general, as we're working through this, and you've probably already found this, I would allow yourself more time generally to do everything. So if you, for instance, you're having a degree recital this semester, you might go ahead and pull those forms and start that process. I mean, I think everything will get done. And if you have last minute things come up, we'll certainly help with that. It's no problem. But I think just for your own stress level, you know, the more time you can allow yourself to go through some of these, you know, paperwork type things. And I'm in a paperwork office, so that's kind of something I'm familiar with. So any, you know, the more time you can give yourself to take care of some of that, because a lot of that is communication. And when there's so much going on, it can take a little bit longer. So that's, I think that's, and then I think for Dr. Jutras, can you talk with us about the micro market?
Sure, yeah, and thank you for the information on those points. So one piece of good news this summer, I hope you'll agree with me that it's good news. Something that's been a challenge in our building for a long time is the availability of food. And by the time classes start, you will see a new micro market down in the second floor. This is a process we started before COVID-19 hit, and I'm glad that we're going to be able to finish it. And basically, there's going to be a much wider array of options for you for food. I'm not sure exactly what will be there to start with because they're rotating things, but I believe on some days they will have some salads and wraps and prepared sandwiches, things like that. Healthier drinks, there will be hot coffee for purchase. You know, think a little bit more like you might find at a racetrack or a QuickTime or a gas station, something like that. It's going to be self-serve. You'll select things and pay for them at a kiosk. And so it's available to you anytime you're in the building. It's not going to close. So I hope that's something that's useful to you, and I hope that helps keep you a little bit healthier in the building. I know there's also a great irony here, and the micro market is probably most valuable when conditions are normal and we're in the building for long stretches of time. Now that we have the micro market, we're telling you to leave the building. But maybe you can grab some food and go. And of course, you know, things will return to normal at some point, and we'll be able to enjoy that. This is my last slide. Before I get to that, I just wondered, and if you're not ready to do this, that's fine. Dr. Childs, did you want to say anything about orientation and kind of the events that happen when we start the semester?
Sure. For those of you who are new incoming students, just earlier today, you should have gotten an email from the graduate office with an update about orientation. Basically, all orientation and advising activities for new students will take place in some kind of distance format. They are not going to be face-to-face. So meetings that ordinarily would take you to the graduate school or to the CTLTA training, those are all moved online. Our informational meetings will turn into Zoom meetings in a similar format to this one. Advising will take place online. We will not have diagnostic exams because we can't move them online, but we also can't safely put all of you in a room together to take those exams. So they're just going to go away. That information you should have seen in an email a few hours ago. We will also have for you, hopefully later today, if not later today, then early next week, some additional specifics about how advising in particular is going to work, what resources are there, and what procedure we'll use. I'll add to, just while I have the floor here, I mentioned earlier in the presentation here our goal to try to cut down on the amount of in-person work that you might be doing with our staff. That also extends to paperwork. We are going to continue to try to keep as much paperwork as possible as online, using digital signatures and digital forms. The last thing that we need is to be passing pieces of paper that lots of people have touched around to each other. So that will continue to be a practice for us with those things that require signatures.
Thank you. So this is basically the end of the informational part of the meeting, and then we'll start fielding your questions in the chat. But before we do that, I just want to wrap up by saying, you know, like Dr. Child said earlier, we just need your help. We need to all work together to take this seriously and to get through this. And for me, that starts with being patient and being flexible with everyone in the world around you. And, you know, this is something we should do every day, not just in the midst of a pandemic. But keep in mind that, you know, everyone is stressed, everyone is anxious, everyone is overworked, everyone is in this kind of weird situation. Nobody has all the answers, nobody knows exactly what's going to happen next. So just be patient and understanding of your fellow students, of the staff, of the faculty, of your director, if you think he deserves it. And of course, we want to extend that same grace to you and be patient with all of you. I think that's a big part of us getting through this together and getting through this healthily. And that's just part of being caring to those around you. These guidelines are designed to keep you safe, but they're also designed to keep everybody safe. And a lot of what we're asking individuals to do is for the safety of those around you. It may or may not be true, I don't really know, but you know, you hear a lot of talk of, well, the virus doesn't affect young people as much, it's not as big a deal if they catch it. But don't forget that we have lots of faculty and staff in the building, myself included, who are not so young. They may be at higher risk. We don't want to do anything to compromise their health or their safety. And I would even be cautious about your own health and safety, even if you are young. We're still learning a lot about this virus. So please be responsible in the building. I can't tell you how important it is that everyone follows these guidelines. Okay, we need that time in the practice rooms for the air to exchange. If you hang out for an extra 15 or 20 minutes because you have a lesson coming up and you really feel like you need to work on that etude, you're putting someone else at risk and the whole system falls apart. And I know how much we want to practice and we want to play. I know how important that is, but we need to get through this pandemic. That needs to be our top priority. So we are working on consequences for abusing the practice room privileges, but I would expect them to be quite severe. I want to be your friendly director and as friendly as possible, but if I see you in a room and that room is supposed to be empty for air exchange, I'm pretty much going to say you're done. You're not practicing again in the building. Just, you know, obviously we can't police everyone, so we need you to police yourself. And be responsible with all of that. Do your part to keep things clean and safe. Wipe surfaces when you touch them. Try to avoid touching things. I know we've said that 3 times already, but it's worth repeating. You know, another thing that the experts continue to impress upon me is if we all act as if we have the virus and we don't want to spread it to others, that is a great way for stopping the spread of this. And that just means even if you don't have any symptoms, you know, it's still important to keep your mask on all the time, to keep your distance, to just treat other people with respect. I'm sure most of you know it's possible to carry and transmit the virus without showing any symptoms at all. And again, we've said this, please only come in the building when it's necessary. I know we love to hang out in the building. I know we've been hanging out in the band room or the music teacher's room since fourth grade or whenever we all started this. I know that's part of being a music nerd, but we just need to keep our distance right now. We need to keep the building safe. And you should also know that we are keeping the general community out of the building. And this is sad too, but you know, large community groups like the Georgia Children's Chorus are not going to be in the building this fall. By limiting it to just the people who should be in the building for essential things, we're hoping to help keep things safe and help mitigate the spread. I realize, and we are all well aware all across campus, that this causes problems, like where do I go when I'm not in the building, especially if I'm in between classes and I need to be back in the building. I wish I had an answer for that. I wish I had a great solution. We are currently aware that there's a centralized effort to identify places around campus where students can go in between classes. And I'm advocating heavily that they find some place in our East Campus area that can be used for that and put it on the list. So we will see where that goes. And then, you know, I'm not going to pretend that everything's going to be perfect this semester. It's not. We're disappointed that we can't do what we usually do, and I'm not going to try and put a happy face on all of that. At the same time, I'm continually impressed with the effort and the ingenuity of our staff and faculty. You have no idea how hard they've been working all summer. I mean, this is normally when they take a break, trying to think of creative things we can do this semester, ways we can provide the best musical experience, new things we can try that would be valuable for you. And you as graduate students can do a lot to help us with that creative thinking. I mean, you are the future leaders in our profession. So you might have ideas of things we can do productively or topics we should cover or you know, projects we can do. I don't want to overburden everyone with all kinds of special projects. I know we're stressed and this is unusual, but at the same time, you know, there might be some fun things that we can do to seize opportunities in the face of this crisis. So I hope you know, and I hope you appreciate that my door, as it will, is always open. My physical door won't be this semester, but the virtual door of emailing me, responding to surveys, and letting me know what you think, what you want to do. And of course, you can send that feedback to the faculty as well, and you can be part of the process. Even though we have restrictions to keep us safe, I hope you understand why. I hope you understand that they're there because we care about you. And then we just want to see how can we make the most of this world with those restrictions. So with that in mind, I am going to turn off my screen share. I have not seen the chat, and I will not monitor the chat, but Dr. Frigo is going to take us through the questions you've asked, and we will try to get them answered.
Okay, some of these questions, I know that Dr. Childs will be the person to answer it, specific to TA responsibilities and things like that. But this first one, for composition recitals in Ramsey or Hodgson Hall, how many players would be allowed to be on stage?
So it will depend on the type of player and the distancing that's necessary. So if there are wind or brass players or singers, there can be no more than five of those, and they'll have to keep a 20-foot distance, which is about all that's going to fit on Ramsey. I'm not even sure five will fit on Ramsey with 20-foot spacing. If there's string players or pianists or people who are masked, there can be up to 10, but they'll still have to maintain university guidelines say a 6-foot distance. I actually prefer an 8-foot distance just because that accounts for the width of the human body as well in between people. So it basically depends on the players, but I hope you see how that kind of fits within the guidelines we're setting out.
Okay, next question. What is the plan for traffic flow within the building? One-way hallways, one-way stairwells, distancing markers outside, classroom doors, restricted elevator use?
So that's a great question, and we are working on all of that. I don't have all the specifics for you right now, but yes, it's very likely that one stairway is going to be up only, one stairway is going to be down only. I'm thinking we'll probably put the down only stairway by the elevator, maybe. Probably one person at a time on the elevator. We have ordered a lot of signage. It hasn't been delivered yet, but there'll be some markers around some things, like say in the offices where you might interact with a staff member to show 6-foot distancing, those kinds of things. Again, we would prefer if you can email or call the staff person first, again, because we don't want to put a staff person at risk with kind of a constant parade of people in that office. But yeah, we're working on plans for all of that.
Okay, thank you. Will classrooms have 30 plus minutes to air out between classes?
No, they will not. They will have the 20 minutes that'll be the, you know, kind of standard 15 minute break plus the extra 5. That's not built into UGA's plan or USG's plan. I do want to add, and this has come up in the other discussions and meetings, you know, all this stuff about aerosols and that kind of buildup, our main concern with that is when people have their masks off. That's the singing and the, you know, playing wind and brass instruments. When you're sitting in a class and everyone has their mask on, the masks do a lot to mitigate the spread of aerosols. So I've noticed a lot of people, we've been rolling out these guidelines over the last few days, and I notice a lot of people start to get the idea that, oh, we always have to be 20 feet apart and we always have to let rooms air out for long periods of time. That's primarily for when the mask has been off and somebody's been moving a lot of air in that space.
Okay, thank you. Is the break room still available to use, especially the microwave?
Still a work in progress. That's part of the building safety plan that we're working on. Again, this is, I have to give you some answers you probably don't want to hear, but I suspect the answer is probably not. We probably won't be able to have eating in the break room or a shared food space. It is my understanding that there will be a microwave in the micro market for use with some of those products.
Okay, and what about access to the computer lab?
That's a good question, and that's actually also a work in progress. I hope you understand some of those answers are just necessary with all that we're trying to work on. I've had emails and conversations this week with both IT and the music technology faculty about what we're going to do, and we're still not sure yet. But we'll hopefully have details for that next week.
Okay, this one may be for Dr. Childs. For TA responsibilities, is it required that we do in-person teaching unless we have a documented health excuse?
You want to tackle part of that, Dr. Dutris, or do you want me to take it?
No, I can probably tackle that. It depends on the class and it depends on the situation. Right now, USG and UGA are expecting that all classes have a face-to-face component. We have been given some latitude in what that means. So that doesn't mean that the class has to meet face-to-face every week or every class period. It could mean that much of it happens online and there are occasional face-to-face interactions with smaller groups. As you can imagine, this is a lot to work through for all of our faculty. The same approach basically applies for classes that are led by TAs. There is a process, if you feel you're at a high risk, to apply for an accommodation. You do that by writing to HR, and maybe Dr. Childs could put that email address in the chat for everyone. And if you feel that you're compromised and you would like an accommodation, I would encourage you to apply for that. And some of our TAs have already gone ahead and applied and gone through that process. Beyond that, I do not want to put anyone in a situation that they are uncomfortable with, as much as those things are in my control. And so, you know, I think we're willing to work with individuals on a case-by-case basis to find a situation that makes you comfortable. And again, I also hope you understand that all of these guidelines are set up so that our interactions are as safe as possible. So the guidelines are there so you can feel comfortable going into a trumpet lesson in the band hall because there's lots of space and air exchange. What we're trying to do is set up, you know, rules so face-to-face interactions are safe and nobody's at additional risk. So I don't know, that's probably a bit of a non-answer. This is a challenge campus-wide. This is a challenge for faculty, is how do we deal with this directive to have some face-to-face instruction in the face of this? But I want you to know that we're trying to be as flexible as we can. Obviously, we still need to deliver quality instruction to the students. Dr. Childs, is there anything you want to add to that?
No, I think that covers it. I'm trying to look here through my email archive. Everyone on this meeting should have received emails over the summer about the process for requesting that accommodation if you want it. It is a kind of multi-step process that starts with your contacting HR, and then someone from HR gets back in touch with you. We'll dig that email up and send it out again so that everyone has access to it.
I mean, I believe for any of you that or most of you that have instructional responsibilities, these would be in fully masked situations. So you're not, you know, you're not going to be teaching a singer with the mask off. And again, those are, with respect to the aerosol transmission, those are much safer than the alternative.
Okay, another TA related question. I'm a TA for a large class with at least 2 to 3 back-to-back breakouts of 25 to 30 students, usually non-music majors coming from across campus. Facilitating these breakouts under the listed guidelines seems improbable at best. What should I do about managing this?
So I'm not sure exactly what class this is referring to, but I have a guess as to what type of class. And the first thing to do is get with the professor of that class and find out what the high flex plan is. Because first of all, I mean, if you normally have 25 or 30 people in a School of Music classroom, that's not going to happen. We can't fit that many people into any of our classrooms. So it's likely that your breakout sessions are only going to happen in person on occasion and that they're going to be smaller groups. And we just, you know, get with your professor and find out what that plan is. And I think all of our faculty are willing to be flexible. I mean, if that plan is still in progress, I would encourage you to participate in the development of that plan so everyone feels comfortable.
Okay, due to symphonic band being canceled this semester, should non-music majors that were planning on being in a large ensemble still record and send their auditions accordingly for spring large ensembles, or should they hold off for now?
Boy, that's a great question. I mean, we've basically decided that auditions are not necessary for ensembles in the fall. Some of your applied professors might still have auditions in the studio just as a pedagogical exercise. You know, it's good to still learn the excerpts and go through the process. We haven't really talked about spring ensembles or auditions yet. So I would say hold off for now. I'll double check with the ensemble directors and let you know if I'm wrong about that. But I would imagine that audition information about the spring will come much later in the semester. You know, obviously when we know what the spring is going to look like, are we still going to be under these conditions? Is it going to be better? That kind of thing.
Okay. Is there an official word on opera ensemble and theater, more than one singer at a time in a room?
So I don't know if I'm able to give unofficial words here. So don't take this as gospel, but take it as tentative. I think with opera, we're hoping to do some limited things with, say, two or three singers at a time. Again, with this distance in the large space with strict time limits. And the hope is that maybe we can work towards a scenes concert later in the semester that has both solo singing and very small groups singing.
Okay, this was directed to Dr. Childs. What about comps?
So comprehensive exams will still be able to take place if it is your intention to take your comp. For the written portion of the comps, we probably don't actually need to make a lot of changes, since traditionally those are done either in a take-home format or as a timed essay where you're in a room by yourself. We will probably be encouraging more people to use the take-home format just because spaces in the building may be limited. And then the oral exam would be done using Zoom or a similar medium so that everyone can have a conversation but without having to all be in the same space.
Okay, thank you. And another question related to DMA tests. Is there a potential date and format for the music history prelim exam?
So the preliminary exams are on my list as the thing to do as soon as we get through orientation and actually get classes started. That's right at the top of my list. Traditionally, they have been scheduled in early September for the fall semester version. We're obviously going to have a conversation about whether the format of the exam needs to be changed, whether changing the format might also mean that we need to change dates. That's a conversation I'll have with the relevant areas. But for now, I don't have an answer to that question, but we will address and answer that question.
Thank you. Does UGA have an official exposure/contact tracing policy? For example, if a student in a class with you tests positive for COVID, is there a 14-day quarantine requirement for the others in the class?
Okay, so let me take that question in parts. I believe early next week, UGA is gonna roll out an app/website that's called Dog Check. I saw a prototype of this in a meeting yesterday. And that's gonna be for a number of things. They're actually gonna ask us all to volunteer to report our symptoms on a daily basis. And every one of us is gonna be supplied with two masks and a thermometer from UGA. And they're just gonna encourage us to log in every day and, you know, answer some questions. Have you had symptoms? Have you been in contact with someone? Another part of that is reporting test results, and everyone who has a positive test result will be required to report that to UGA immediately so it can be tracked and so contact tracing can begin. Now, I am not an expert in this, but it is my understanding that very shortly after that report happens, the contact tracing part is moved over to the Georgia Department of Public Health, which has a protocol in place for contact tracing. Trust me, I have asked this question and I've been in meetings where this question has been asked many times. I do not have a clear answer on what happens when a positive test is known with respect to stopping a class or quarantining the people in that class. I have been told in the last couple of days that more information on that will eventually be coming. So I can't say for sure what happens, but, you know, obviously the whole point of contact tracing is to inform people that have been in contact with the person who tested positive. I saw on the Dog Check thing that, you know, if you click the box that I have had a positive test, it then takes you to other boxes for you to say where you've been in at least the 48 to 72 hours preceding that test, so they can start to identify people. It's, and forgive me, because I'm learning a lot about this as I go and I'm trying my best. Originally back in March and April, there were protocols in place to keep the names of people reporting positive anonymous. Obviously, they still want to get in touch with people that they've contacted, but it was designed to protect students' privacy. I'm not entirely sure if that remains in place with this new system. I would think it might. There is, and the only reason I mention that is I know I've heard, you know, that some people might feel like, oh, I don't want to report my positive test because I don't want other people to know about it. I don't want to get, you know, kicked out of this activity or that activity. And obviously, we don't want anyone to use that as a reason for not reporting. It's important to report both for your own safety and for the safety of others around you, so we can help track this.
Okay, and just asking for a clarification or confirmation here. For incoming graduate students, are there now no music theory or music history graduate diagnostic exams as previously scheduled in person? If so, how does that affect advisement?
Yeah, so that is correct. We are not going to be able to offer the diagnostic exams in music history or music theory. And what that means is that we're going to encourage you in your meeting with your advisor to have a good chat about how you feel about your own level of knowledge in those areas, and to basically make a self-selecting decision whether or not you want to choose to take some of the remedial courses that are offered for that purpose. I'll add here on the music theory side, we are in a sense taking advantage of the fact that a lot of instruction is being moved online to develop a new kind of fully hybridized and also modularized version of the graduate music theory review class, so that if you do feel that you would benefit from some theory remediation, that's not going to be a one-size-fits-all experience. There will be the possibility for you to customize what areas you would work on and focus on, and you would have, you know, faculty guidance to help you in making that determination.
And I know we're not supposed to joke about the situation, but all of you incoming students, you know, I think the current students who had to do these diagnostic tests now feel like you probably owe them a cup of coffee or a beer or something because you just got out of them.
Okay, well, we still have access to lockers.
There will be some access to lockers, but I would like to limit that access. And that's just designed, again, to keep the building safe. So I haven't really figured out the best way to do this. I mean, obviously, if someone has a large instrument that lives in the building and needs the locker, you'll still have the locker. It's kind of like the, if you can practice at home, please do so. You know, if you don't really need a locker, I'm probably going to ask you to think about not signing up for a locker this semester, just to help the building and help the community. And keep in mind that you're probably going to be in the building a lot less than you normally would be. So you may not have the need for that locker that you had. And then as much as possible, we're going to try to distance lockers if we're able and have a protocol for wiping that surface every time you go in and out of the locker.
Okay, will school-owned instruments be available soon for ensemble/chamber music preparation, assuming those can happen in a safe way?
I mean, I would say yes. Again, that kind of depends on the situation. I mean, my initial reaction is most of that ensemble work is probably not going to happen. But for the very small ensembles that can go forward, I suspect we'll find a way to get you the instrument. We may have to do a little extra with cleaning or sanitizing or something like that, but we will try to work on that.
Okay, since there is a 30-minute limit for recitals with accompaniment, will voice recitals be limited to that time frame due to our work with accompaniment?
I mean, yeah, if this is a limit on your work with a live pianist. And again, that's just to help protect the health of that pianist. Now, I know this isn't ideal, don't throw things at me, but you know, we're trying to do the best we can. If you can do more with recorded accompaniments, that's fine. If you can sing things that are unaccompanied, that's fine. So yeah, it's work with a live pianist, and I'm talking with the piano area about what we can do. And I think there is a willingness for them to make recorded accompaniment tracks for all of you. And maybe, you know, since this is a little different than the shutdown in March, we might even be able to do something like they record the track with you in the room at an appropriate distance, so you can kind of help guide some of the tempos and things you want in that track, so it's a better experience for you than, you know, something just straight out of the can. So yeah, that limit is on your work with a live pianist.
Okay, somewhat related, just to clarify, all recitals are limited to 30 minutes?
No, that's the limit with a wind instrument, a brass instrument, or a singer with other live people. So if it's a string recital and both people are masked, that time limit doesn't apply. If part of your recital is, you know, just you on stage unmasked without anybody else. And I realize this is messy and this is not a great answer, but, you know, we'll figure out the best things that we can for these scenarios. Again, with trying to balance, everybody needs to be safe. We want to make as much music as we can.
Okay, next question. I'd love to know what chamber music will look like. Coachings, rehearsing, recitals, etc.
So any chamber music that happens would be subject to these same guidelines. And you can see in the guidelines that some chamber music can happen. So let's say, for example, a string quartet, everybody wears their masks, they sit 8 feet apart. Things are relatively fine in that scenario. It gets a little more difficult with the wind, brass, and singing because we need 20 feet apart. And the real difficulty with chamber music for those players is finding available space that's large enough. Okay, we only have so many halls that are big enough for this kind of rehearsing. And we are, for reasons that I hope you'll appreciate, prioritizing that space for as many applied lessons to happen as possible. So this is what, you know, and it's kind of this feels like a dad answer, something I would say to my teenage kids all the time, you know, it depends. I don't know. We'll see. It kind of depends on, you know, whether there's much space available for your chamber group to rehearse after we get in the private lessons we want to get in. And right now we just don't know. We're working on collecting that data and trying to build that schedule out. I do know that, you know, some chamber groups have already talked about doing what they can outside. And I'm supportive of that. We are trying to think about what we can do to kind of plan outside use so we don't have 8 groups all trying, you know, to use the same little circle of grass at the same time. But that might be an option for limited chamber music. I know it's not ideal, but just remember, we're going to keep solo performance and lessons first. We're going to focus on that. The next thing we'll add as space is available to us is small chamber groups. I just don't know how much space and time we're going to have.
Okay, thank you. Is there any way for the School of Music to make the self-reporting mandatory?
Of a positive, I assume this means of a positive COVID test?
Symptoms.
Yeah, that was talked about in a meeting with the team that built that app yesterday. I mean, I don't think there's any legal way for me to require you to tell me your health symptoms every day. I'm happy to encourage a culture of that and try to ask everyone to do that and say that we're supportive of it and we appreciate it. But I think there is some legal trouble with saying someone has to do this every day. It's my understanding that there is not legal trouble with saying you have to report a positive test for COVID. because that falls under different rules as applying to public health in the face of a pandemic. That's the answer they gave me anyways.
Okay, somewhat related. Is the university going to have students sign a statement or do anything like that, committing to responsible behavior off campus? If students are in bars on the weekend, the guidelines can only do so much.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. And I mean, I'll be honest, that's something that's on everybody's minds. You know, we can do everything we can to try to keep our building safe, but obviously we can't control what people do outside of the building. I'm not aware of any such statement. Obviously that would be above my level of authority. If I hear of something like that, I will let you know, but I have not heard of any such statement. But I will add that, you know, I would ask all of you to think about your responsibility to everyone around you when you're outside of the building as well. You know, I mean, if, you know, please be smart about what you're doing off campus and on the weekends and you know, just act accordingly. I know there are a lot of different opinions about the virus, but I think it's pretty clear that as a nation, we haven't done a very good job of getting this under control. And I think if we can all work together, we can get it under control and get out of it sooner. I don't know of a statement, but I hope that our culture can support everyone acting responsibly.
Okay, is it possible to schedule and play a chamber recital with string quintet in the fall semester?
If space is available, yes. So that would not fit on the stage in Edge. That would have to go on stage in Ramsey or Hodgson. But yeah, 5 string players masked with distancing would be fine. Again, we just have to wait and see, is there space available to rehearse that? You know, once we prioritize lessons and solo recitals first.
So there's nothing stopping safe chamber music from being scheduled in the halls right now?
Right. The only thing stopping it is availability of the halls, which is sometimes an issue in normal times. And right now, it's unclear to me how much access we will have to Hodgson and Ramsey. You know, like just during the day, that's, you know, we're still kind of working through that. And there are just a lot of, I mean, understatement of the century, right? There are a lot of unknowns in front of me, in front of all of us right now. I'm not exactly sure what the demand is going to be for solo recitals this fall. I don't know if it will be much heavier than usual. It could be lighter than usual. And, you know, depending on where that demand falls, there might be, you know, a decent amount of space for chamber music. There might not be any. We just kind of need to wait and see on that.
Okay, another question related to the diagnostic exam for entering students. Students do not have to take the tests in the future to graduate. Is that right?
That's right. The test is just canceled. You're not going to take it now. You're not going to take it at any point in the future. You're off the hook.
Okay, thank you. And it looks like this may be the last question, although you all are welcome to keep asking questions if you have any more. What is the best way to handle a situation where someone isn't following the guidelines? Not wearing a mask, not social distancing, hanging out?
That's a great question. And that is also on everyone's minds all across campus. And so this is my view on the School of Music. The School of Music is requiring masks to be on in the building at all times. Other than, you know, in a single office by yourself with the door closed, or in one of these lessons or rehearsals where we've set up all the right conditions, right? Those are the only two exceptions to the mask policy. I, as the director of the School of Music, do not consider that up for interpretation or debate. This is the plan for the school. I've talked with other directors about how they're handling this, and this is the path I'm taking. So, and I'm taking that because I'm going to maintain that it's not always possible to keep 6-foot distancing in the public spaces of our building. This is probably getting way down into the legal weeds that more of you don't want to hear about, but welcome to my world. I mean, go read the actual mandate and you'll see that it could be interpreted in a couple of different ways. In our building, I am interpreting it that masks are on all the time, period. If someone is not complying, you politely ask them to comply. And if they're not willing to comply, you ask them to leave the situation. And if it gets any farther than that, or even if you don't feel comfortable doing either of those things, just bring it to the attention of a faculty member or someone in the office. These violations of this will be considered violations of the student code of conduct. And so we can kind of take it from there. I am not wanting to add any stress to your lives, so I do not expect any of you to take responsibility for policing this or feel like you have to solve problems like this. Just find a faculty member or, you know, find a staff member if it doesn't seem to be going anywhere. That said, I really don't expect that's going to happen in our building. I hope we all, you know, kind of keep the spirit of a family and work together. And you know, it should mostly be us in the building and not a lot of non-music major traffic in the building, not nearly as much as normal. And so hopefully we can pull together and have a good culture for this.
Okay, another question came in. When do incoming students meet the director to arrange our classes in this semester?
Is that a question for me, maybe? Are we asking about advising?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, so advising for incoming graduate students will be handled remotely. I think I mentioned earlier, but I know was included in that email that went out earlier today. We will have an email out to all of you shortly, maybe yet today, if not early next week, with some additional details about the mechanics of advising. Basically, you will make an appointment to meet with your advisor on Zoom or in some other remote fashion to have a conversation about your needs and your plans and to choose classes that you want to register for the fall. There's a form that will be filled out to express what those classes are, and then your advisor will send that form via email to Kathleen Powell's office, and then Kathleen is the one who actually removes the advising flag that's currently on your account, which at the moment prevents you from registering. So then once that flag's been removed, she'll also put in if any overrides are necessary based on the things that you're registering for. We'll get that all taken care of so that then you'll be able to go ahead and register. So with that email that'll go out to you, we'll have contact information, the email address for your advisor. The graduate advisors will also all get lists of the new incoming students with your email addresses. So between those, we're figuring you'll be able to have appropriate communication and plan that meeting and move forward.
That concludes one more question. Sorry, I thought we were done. While we can hope everyone will be respectful to the safety guidelines, what is the protocol for enforcing or redirecting non-compliant behavior in the classroom environments where TAs are the only present instructor?
So, good question. And again, I don't want any of you to feel particularly at risk or concerned about this. So I would follow basically the same approach. I'm assuming that the most likely scenario is someone is not wearing a mask. Ask them to put on a mask. Oh, and by the way, you know, we don't want people to take these like candy, but we will have disposable masks in the office to solve a potential problem of someone saying, oh, I don't have one with me. So you can go to the office and get them a mask or send them to the office to get a mask. I mean, you have the right to tell them that they can't be in the class without their mask. They need to leave. If it goes further than that, go find somebody. You know, there will be someone in the office. I would hope it wouldn't go further than that. And you know, again, it's very good to plan for these scenarios and think through, well, okay, what will I do so you're ready for it? But hopefully it's not going to happen. Hopefully it's going to be very rare. I know, you know, I guess 2 or 3 years ago, UGA passed campus carry, which allows people to have weapons on campus. And everybody was really worried about that. And, you know, knock on wood, we haven't had any instances in the School of Music where that's been of any concern. So hopefully it's the same with masks. You know, like I said, it's so clear to me how well the masks work. The more I listen to the researchers and the doctors and all of this stuff, it just is just something we need to do to get through this.
Okay, no more questions. I just want to point out, if you didn't see the link I pasted in the chat for School of Music COVID and Fall Operations, there's a webpage that has gone up, and it has very detailed information about everything you learned today, and is going to be where any other information and updates get posted. So be sure to bookmark that page. It's the place to go to be reminded of the protocols and safety measures that are being taken.
And we'll be constantly updating that. I mean, there's, you know, I already know of 4 or 5 content areas we're going to be ready to add to that webpage within the next few days. And we're just trying to work on getting as much information out as quickly as we can. So I want to thank all of you for coming. It, you know, help me out, turn your cameras on again so I see. Hopefully you're still smiling after all that. I know we probably exceeded the recommended Zoom capacity. Oh, look at all those people smiling. That's great. That's what we want to see. And that's what we want to see in the building this year. I mean, listen, I know this is no fun for anybody. It's no fun for me. The last thing I want to do is say you can't practice as much as you usually do, or you can't play with as many people as you usually do. But we got to get through this. And you know, the sooner we get through this, the sooner we can get back to everything. In the meantime, let's try to make the most of it. Let's try to do what we can and enjoy what we can and appreciate what we can, and don't stress about what you can't do. Everybody knows this is an unusual world. This is unusual times. Everybody's stressed. You know, just let some of that stuff go. Don't spend mental energy on that. And you know, like I said, we'll get through this, and we'll have some fun this semester. And you guys will all be a big part of that. Have a great afternoon. If you have other questions, let us know, and we will try to answer them. Bye-bye.